Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to PainReliefRadio.com. This is your host, Catherine Merrow, the Pain Relief Coach. Today is Thursday, December 3rd, and we are broadcasting live from beautiful Michigan, the Great Lakes State, and our guests are joining us from a little slice of paradise in California. Today we're going to be talking about raw foods, inflammation, and pain with our experts from the Healing Patch Cookbook. Remember, I'm not a doctor, I'm the pain relief coach, and you can always get more information at simplepainrelief.com. Today we're going to be talking with Sarah Woodward and Julie Hoffenberg. They are the authors of the Healing Patch Cookbook. They come from two different backgrounds that they came into this work together. And I'm going to ask them to tell us about their interesting stories and about the differences that raw food made in their lives. Hi, Sarah and Julie.
Hello.
Hey, Catherine.
You each have an interesting story about how you came into raw food. Would you please share your stories?
Yeah, absolutely. Sarah's a bit dramatic. I'll kind of start out with mine as a lead-in. I was kind of like your average, generally healthy person I've worked in natural health field for about 7 years, just in supplement departments and doing some management. And I read a lot about, becoming a vegetarian and then a vegan. And at first I was really healthy, but then my health began to kind of go down the tubes, and I switched out a lot of the healthier choices like salads and steamed vegetables and things like that in honor of, potato chips and French fries and other things that were so-called vegan but not healthy. So they were creating things in my body like, acne and rosacea and, developing like cysts in my ears and things like that. So I was kind of like your standard American that thinks they're fine and they're just kind of going along with life, because I could still do things. I wasn't immobile. I was gaining weight, but, I was still able to run. I was still able to hike. It never stopped me from doing anything, but I knew I wasn't beyond okay. I knew I wasn't at my optimum. So I met a gentleman who was actually working for me, and, I thought I was fabulous because I was a vegan and I could just teach him so much, and meanwhile, I had all these issues going on. So what really happened was he taught me about raw food, raw vegetarian food. And he was a spitting image of health. He looked much healthier than I did. So he taught me how to detox with some raw foods and do some gallbladder cleansing. And he was just a radiating ball of light. So, and could also articulate exactly what I needed to know about the raw food movements. And he had very clear answers to all my questions. So that began my path, and I kind of, broke into raw foods that way. But I'll let Sarah share her story because it's a little bit more dramatic.
Yeah. Mine started when I was in my 20s, I was about 23 or 24, and I landed myself in the hospital because I had this massive lump in my stomach, and I put it off for months. I wouldn't go to the hospital, and I just didn't want to deal with it. And then finally my sister dragged me to the hospital because I couldn't even stand. I was vomiting and massive migraines and just really bad condition. And so the doctors told me that I needed an emergency surgery. And so I got it, and then they told me that I had tumors on my right ovary, four massive tumors, two the size of like a small loaf of bread and two the size of grapefruits. And so they're so huge, I could push them from side to side. And then on my discharge, the doctors broke the news to me that I had stage 3 ovarian cancer. And so this was a shock for the doctors, for my parents, for my family, for me, because ovarian cancer is like a disease that older women get in like in their 60s and just and later on in life. So because I was so young, the doctors and everyone thought that, you know, I could go through chemotherapy and get a hysterectomy and I would just bounce back because, you know, I'm young, I'm in my 20s, my body will just bounce back. And so I did the chemo, I did surgeries, but I didn't want to take all the extra medications they put you on when doing chemo. So I did, like, I did wheatgrass juices, I did orange juices, vitamin supplements, Chinese herbal medicines, and acupuncture. And I did all these in really, really high therapeutic dosages. So that helped me through the chemotherapy. But then after, like, all my treatments, about a year after, I wasn't getting better. I was still sluggish. I had, you know, a low immune system. I couldn't be around sick people and just not doing well. And then I met Julie, and she taught me about raw foods and detoxing. And so I gave it a try, and it worked. I got energy, and my immune system is good. I could be around sick people. I could go running and not feel bad, and I'm not such a sloth anymore. So that's kind of my transformation. I went from post-chemo child to a thriving young lady ready for life.
Those are both good stories, and it's always good to hear somebody's success story. Now, you're involved in a restaurant, and you have a website, rawhealingpatch.com. I think that's where you sell seeds.
Yeah, currently seasonally our seeds are off the site right now, but we will have organic and heirloom seeds for sale periodically. Right now we sell our cookbook and we have some upcoming raw food coaching coming to our website and things like that. And then as far as the restaurant goes, that is kind of like a dream in the works. We began the cookbook and some other things to raise funds to hopefully open maybe a little raw food or healing cafe in the future. But, you know, that's on the many multiple lists of to-do things, definitely.
Yeah, that'll be a good thing to do. Now, why did you decide to call your business Raw Healing Patch?
Well, a friend of mine and I, ages ago, thought the Healing Patch was just a good name for a vitamin or herb store because, you know, it's like a vegetable patch, like a place people come to heal. The same as you would go out into a patch full of pumpkins or vegetables and just experience the joy of harvesting things that will help you heal. So that's kind of where it came up with. And then, you know, we never did open a vitamin and herb shop, but the dream just kind of transitioned. And then I met Sarah. So we just sort of adopted the name for what we do, which is help people heal and get them a few steps closer to health. And oftentimes this involves raw food, so that's where our name came from.
Now, I heard you telling me about how you both had had various symptoms, but now you're both the spitting image of health. You're feeling so much better, and you're so much healthier. And this show is about simple pain relief techniques. Now, some foods apparently cause inflammation. However, perhaps raw food does not cause inflammation. Would you like to talk a little bit about the causes of inflammation and how raw food is better for us and helps avoid the inflammation? And, well, inflammation, of course, is a cause of pain because it causes swelling. Swelling can cause pain. So tell me how and why food that's not raw causes pain.
Yeah, absolutely. That's pretty simple. I mean, all pain comes from an inflammatory response, the wearing down of proper tissues in the body from calcification, like the wearing down of cartilage that you would have in your knees, and just from toxicity in the body. And these are all basically inflammation responses that happen, and inflammation is your protection. Like if you have no connective tissues in a certain spot, or if something is in pain, it immediately inflames and surrounds some sort of like a liquid. And this response is what we feel as pain. So the things that create this in the body are generally things that are dietary. I mean, it's different when somebody breaks a leg or something like that. I'm not talking about that so much, although raw foods can help there too. But, you know, when people are going through a painful situation and you're eating things that create a further inflammation in the body, such as dairy or eggs or, you know, even some things like wheat, you know, things with gluten in them are very inflammatory based. So we take in these toxic things and then we increase the inflammation in our body, which leads to an increase of pain. And another side note, when we're eating cooked foods, the natural enzymes that are in that food that help it digest are no longer present once you cook them above 118 degrees, which is about when you can put your finger in comfortably. As soon as you have to take your finger out, your food is no longer raw. And when those enzymes die, you have nothing there to help it digest. An apple is ready for digestion when you eat it. If you cook that apple, you have to take enzymes out of your body to go digest the apple. And people say, well, so what? So our enzymes are there. It's no big deal. But it is a big deal because your enzymes are your whole life force. Your enzymes are your energy, your inflammation control. They make and do everything in your body. I mean, you probably have more enzymes in your body than you do cells of yourself. I know that's true of, you know, your microscopic bacteria. So they're very important. So let's say somebody has, you know, an arthritic condition and it's in their knee. So it's very inflamed, and then you have natural enzymes in the body that are protein-eating, inflammation-digesting enzymes, and they're flooding through your body to control that inflammation. As soon as you eat cooked food, you're pulling all those good enzymes away from your knee to now work on the food. So now we have further inflammation and further pain. So that's kind of a little bit of the science behind it and why raw foods can help, because you give back to your body all of those enzymes you need to reduce inflammation.
So when these enzymes are tied up digesting, trying to help us digest food, they're not available for their job, which should be reducing inflammation.
Right, amongst many, many other things. Our enzymes in our body were not designed to, you know, leave all of their processes and take over our whole digestive tract. It's not what they were designed for.
Okay.
I know from personal experience, I have aches in my knee, my hip, and my lower back. And this happened after chemotherapy. My body just sort of had these weird aches all the time. And when I eat raw foods, like for a long time, over a period of time, and nothing else, that the pains absolutely go away. I don't have them. And then if I eat some food that someone else makes for me, or if I eat more cooked foods, the pains slowly come back. So I think eating raw foods helps that a lot.
Okay.
Definitely.
So you talked a little bit about lightly cooked or steamed food. You said if I could stick my finger in it when I'm cooking it,
mm-hmm,
without getting burned, is that about the temperature you would cook something at to lightly break? What are we doing? We're breaking down the cells?
You're breaking down, yeah. Well, when you cook it, it would be the enzymes breaking down and also your nutrients. Your vitamins will generally completely evaporate or just completely dissipate, and they will no longer be active. And proteins change form. I mean, there's all sorts of chemical negative things that happen when you cook food. But as far as doing things like lightly steamed vegetables or soups or things like that, those are not your most highly inflammatory things. We're not here to tell you, you know, don't steam your broccoli because you're going to, you know, have horrible pain from it. That's not necessarily true. It's more, you know, things like, you know, pasteurized dairy and meat products and eggs are one of the very top inflammatory triggers for people who have a lot of pain or migraines. And if you're eating almost all cooked food, you don't have those enzymes there to be able to help you out with your pain. So it's more about gently transitioning and you know, steamed vegetables or anything boiling or heated like that, they will no longer be raw. You might be able to touch your finger to it later, but it's still been cooked with that steam. So it's not an example of raw food. A good example of lightly heating something would be to make like a nice tomato-based raw soup and then heat it on the stove as you stir it constantly. And at the point that you would have to take your finger out of the soup, that would still be a raw soup. So that's more of like the cooking that we're talking about.
Okay, so that breaks down the fibers a little bit, but it doesn't take any of the nutrients or enzymes away.
Right. It might help, you know, digestion be a little easier, or it's freezing right now and people want warm food. Well, you can create warmth by, you know, exercise, do a few jumping jacks. You can, you know, focus on internal heat through meditation and things like that. But if you're not that type of person, then you might need to gently heat up a soup or something. But, you know, it's more so eliminating the extreme inflammatory foods like the wheat, the dairy, the meat, and those things I was talking about.
So when you were doing the vegan diet, you were not necessarily doing raw. You were simply trying to avoid any kind of food from animal sources.
Right. So I initially was very healthy with it, but eventually became, you know, not at all healthful in my body and was making really bad choices about what I was eating because I was stressed out and I was going through emotional things. So, you know, you could be on the whole sliding scale of a healthy raw foodist, a non-healthy, a healthy vegetarian, a not very healthy one. Absolutely.
That's very true. I have a friend who is a vegetarian, but a very unhealthy vegetarian.
Yeah, you can live off macaroni and cheese as a vegetarian, and that's not very healthy. So.
Yes. Some people say they get stomach upsets with certain raw foods, but I think that you have ways that you tell people they can transition over into a healthier raw diet so they can start to get rid of some of their inflammation and pain.
Yeah, absolutely. And as far as, you know, digestive problems or issues, if you're transitioning from cooked to raw food and something really hurts your stomach badly, that's your body telling you you probably shouldn't be eating that yet or not at all. So, you know, things that give people trouble tend to be some of the cruciferous vegetables, which are kind of in the mustardy families, like, you know, mustard greens or broccoli or cauliflower and these sorts of things. So you want to do limited amounts of those raw and maybe lightly steam some of them, which makes it a little bit easier on the digestive tract. And beyond that, do stuff that makes your belly feel good. People shouldn't be afraid of doing, you know, fruit. Do lots of just fresh, ripe, raw fruit. And fresh salads that don't hurt your belly and tomatoes and, you know, bell peppers and all of the things that might be easier on your body and not create that response, because transitioning into raw food is not about, you know, forcing your digestion to do something it doesn't want to do. You have to be realistic and not create further pain for yourself.
Sometimes the most difficult part of adapting a new way of eating is the getting started, but you're helping people because you wrote this wonderful book, The Healing Patch Cookbook. And tell us about the book. Tell us the best way for people to get the book. And please tell us the best way for them to contact you, Sarah and Julie.
Yeah, we go straight to our website, rawhealingpatch.com. You can buy our book there. And we have a list of all kinds of ways you could contact us and free resources that we give to the people. We're here to help people just transform their lives into a more healthful lifestyle. And we interact with people, so if you ask us questions, we'll respond. So it's rawhealingpatch.com.
Raw.
Yeah, we have, I'm sorry.
It's okay. I was just going to repeat, rawhealingpatch.com.
Right, and we also have resources available for people that can help during their transition. There's a free newsletter sign up on that same website. As mentioned, you know, Sarah said we have all kinds of stuff available there. We also have a YouTube account that has information on everything from supplements to, you know, blood pressure, to organic living, to transitioning into raw food and what you can expect during that transition. And that's available at youtube.com/raw healing patch. Or if you just go to YouTube, you enter raw healing patch in the search and we'll come up. So that is a great resource for people as well. And we do our own blog talk radio show under the same account. I mean, just a plethora of things for people to be able to contact us and keep in touch and, you know, just learn more and more about how to stay healthy and reduce their pain for sure.
And our book is filled with loads of information too. The first half of our book is actually all information about what you're eating, how to connect, and how to be more intuitive about how you feel and just work on feeling better. And then the second half of our book is all recipes, from smoothies to appetizers to meals and desserts even.
I wanted to ask you about some of the things that we usually might use as condiments. They're cooked, for instance, ketchup or maybe honey. Sometimes you can get it raw, but sometimes it's cooked. What about butter? Are there things that cause inflammation that outside of food things, but they're still food, they're condiments? Things that we might eat with raw foods, for instance.
Yeah, other things like that can create inflammation, especially if they're not raw. I mean, ketchups are full of, you know, corn syrups and sugars and all sorts of additives generally. Even an organic ketchup generally has sugar in it, and sugar, refined sugar, is inflammatory. Cooked honeys are extremely toxic to the body. They are basically, you know, food that's been pre-digested by the bees. So we're taking pre-digested sugar straight into the body, and it goes right into the bloodstream. And when you cook it, this just multiplies the effect. So, you know, the best kind of honey you can do would be an organic raw honey. The only brand I'm aware of 100% that we've checked out is YS Organics. And this is a great for honey. It's got the best taste. It's solid at room temperature, which is what you want. And honey companies can legally put the term raw on there, and oftentimes it's not raw. It's been cooked to, you know, cook the wax out or cook the steam out or the water or anything else. So you have to kind of watch that. But as far as putting things on your food with raw food, you generally, like our stuff, we just make it so flavorful that you don't really need to put any of these condiments on it. Like, we have a raw portobello pizza, and the marinara sauce on there, you know, sits on top of the cap of a portobello mushroom. And, I mean, this is, like, probably one of Sarah's favorite recipes of mine, but you'd never know you're not eating pizza. It's so good, and you don't really need any extra condiments or sauces thrown on there or anything like that. So that's the key, is just to make things super flavorful.
So run that one past me one more time, please. It's the cap of a portobello mushroom, those big mushrooms. And what's on top of it?
We make a raw marinara sauce.
Okay.
We usually use, like, some fresh ripe tomatoes, some, you know, natural sun-dried tomatoes that are still raw.
Mm-hmm.
All sorts of spices you would put in a regular marinara sauce. I use tons of oregano, fresh basil, little thyme, a little salt and pepper. And you can create a sauce, and then you just stack it with any vegetables or mushrooms or onions or peppers or anything else you like to eat on your pizza. And if people are having a hard time transitioning off of dairy, choose some, you know, raw goat cheddar is a good option to put on the pizza, because, or a raw cow's milk mozzarella, if you must do cow's milk. But, you know, those are good options as transition that are less inflammatory and less toxic to the body.
We have a few more minutes. Do you want to share a few more recipes with us? Because that sounded delicious. I was envisioning that in my mind as you were telling me. One recipe I did see, it was for a vegetarian pecan pie. But what it consisted of was a date sliced with a pecan stuck in it. And, you know, I don't know how many of those it'll exactly take to make a what we might consider a serving, maybe 500 or so. So it sounded yummy, but it was, you know, it was a small thing. And then I, kind of being a slug, I often think, well, why wouldn't I just eat the date and the nut? Why would I slice it and put them together? Give me some good recipes. Help me out.
Yeah, definitely. Well, you know, smoothies are probably the easiest to start with. So, you know, in our book, we've got stuff like, you know, papaya coconut smoothies. And, you know, for people who are having trouble at mealtime, we've got raw tacos, which are, you know, you use a cabbage leaf for the shell. And then we dice up mushrooms with taco seasoning. And, you know, you could use different ingredients as marinades, a little bit of wheat-free soy sauce, things like that. And you can make a batch of fresh guacamole to put over it and fresh pico or fresh salsa, and you come up with a taco that is pretty realistic. We give it to our non-meat-eating friends, and they tend to not even know that there's not meat in there, so because we get the mushrooms tasting so much like an actual kind of ground beef. But what sort of recipes do you have, Sarah?
A pesto pasta. We use kelp noodles. You marinate them in lemon oil, lemon and salt, and they taste just like regular noodles. And then you make a pesto sauce, creamy pesto sauce with cashew nuts and then all the herbs. Blend it up and pour it on top. We have recipes for kids that kids could do. Pick your pudding. You put everything in a Cuisinart and you blend it and it's ready to go, and the kids could pick different flavors to put in it, like strawberry, coconut, whatever they want, they could put in it.
Yeah, it's a base of bananas and some pine nuts and some agave nectar. That's a good base to start for a children's pudding. You just kind of blend the bananas, a few pine nuts, and maybe a tablespoon or two of agave nectar, which makes it sweet and it's a lot healthier for them than sugar. And, you know, you can throw vanilla bean in there for flavors. You know, Sarah's 9-year-old daughter, she just picks what she wants to add, sometimes strawberries, sometimes cinnamon, and you make your own kind of pudding.
Yeah, we also have desserts. I mean, they're big portions. She makes a lemon tart, chocolate mousse, strawberry shortcake. We have all kinds of desserts to go along with it, too. And, you know, it's not a date and a nut. It's actually formed into a pie or whatever shape it needs to be, and you have big portions.
Yeah, you have said two things that caught my attention. One was taco seasoning. Is there a healthy type of taco seasoning that doesn't have MSG and all that other stuff in it, the artificial things that you use? And the other was kelp noodles. Never heard of kelp noodles.
Yeah, you can get these things at your local health food store. The taco seasoning, we just use the organic taco seasoning. It doesn't have any salt or anything. It just blends up different peppers, paprika, stuff like that.
I think it's Frontier Herbs.
Yeah, Frontier Herbs.
Always at the health food store available.
And then the kelp noodles, usually in the refrigerated section, and they're just called kelp noodles. And most health food stores have them, or you can order them online and they'll be shipped right to your door.
Yeah, they don't need to be refrigerated initially until they're opened. So they look like kind of like a clear Chinese like rice noodle, and they're very, very crunchy. They are kind of moist. They come in a kind of like a green package that's like a plastic soft package. And if you look, sometimes it's in with like the miso or the refrigerated yogurts or things like that. So you have to kind of ask around at your health food store, but they're excellent once you just marinated them in a touch of lemon and Celtic sea salt, maybe.
Oh, thank you so much. I want to thank you both, Sarah and Julie, for joining us today at painreliefradio.com. And I want to invite our guests to join me again next week on Thursday, December 10th at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. This is Catherine Merrill. Remember, I'm not a doctor. I'm the pain relief coach. And you can always get more information at rawhealingpatch.com and pick up this fabulous cookbook. Remember to take good care of yourself, because you deserve to feel better. Today is Thursday, December 3rd. Have a wonderful week. Bye. Are you still there?
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you so much, Catherine. That was really nice.
You're welcome. That was a lot of fun. I knew we wouldn't be able to cover everything, but that was some good information and some interesting information, and I think whoever listens or reads about it is going to get a lot from it. So I will post on, I think I'll post on both of the blogs about it because it's good stuff. And then I'll send you the link.
All right, thanks.
You're welcome. And then I'll send you the links. And do you know, there is a way that I can pull this specific episode's address for you, too. So did you know that? I have the directions for that, so I can do that, and then you'll have the address, too, of this show, if you wanted to send people to this interview.
Okay. Yeah, that would be great, because we generally put it on Facebook and Twitter and our blog and everywhere else, and then, you know, it gives us exposure, but then it also gives your Pain Relief Radio exposure, so people can come there, mm-hmm. and they realize, oh, hey, great, this is a pain relief thing, and I'm in pain, and so we kind of do that as a support to everybody, and...
Mm-hmm. Good. Yeah. Well, that works. You know, we're doing things that are slightly different, but still in the very healthy field, trying to help people. Because people need help.
They do. They need help and guidance, and they need tools to be able to, like, help themselves instead of, you know, constantly going into the doctor, drugging up, and then relying on that. So.
Oh, that's it, exactly. I write the Carpal Tunnel website, Carpal Tunnel Pain Relief, and people don't know. They go to the doctor, and he says, well, we can operate. And they don't know anything else, so they say, well, okay, that'll fix it.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe.
And they and he's 10 or 20 grand richer, and, you know, they're still in pain.
Yeah. And we were just having that discussion about those lap bands, those stomach
laparoscopic bands.
Surgery, yeah. You know, that's real good for the doctors. And it's a lot of money out of our pockets for the surgery that our insurance companies pay for. And it's not putting any responsibility into the people's hands. Get out there and walk. Mm-hmm. Get out there and move. I had a client who had the surgery done. And it always makes me so nervous, too, because it's real surgery.
Right.
I mean, there's always a chance with surgery something's going to go wrong, especially when people have kids. It makes me nervous. And she had the surgery, and prior to that, she had lost 18 pounds. I said, gee, see, you can do it on your own.
Yeah.
She said, the only reason I did it is because they told me I had to stick to this diet or they weren't going to do the surgery.
Yeah, did she have lap band or did she have bariatric surgery?
I think she had bariatric.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, my aunt had that done. She was like 500 and something pounds.
Mm.
Just, you know, one of those cases where, like, such an addictive eater, I don't think she was willing to, like, move into any other sort of notion that she could slowly begin to exercise and change her diet and do things. And it got to the point where it didn't matter what she put in her body, she would gain weight because she was so immobile. It didn't matter if she just ate an apple.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, you know, I kind of went through the surgery with her, and I think she's probably down, you know, like 250 pounds at least.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know where she's at now, but that was a few years ago. So I've seen instances where it's good, but they've got to really be clear with people that afterwards you can't go back to pizza and burritos. Like, you'll gain it all back. So, a lot of people have the misguided notion that they can eat whatever they want, even though their stomach is smaller.
Yes.
And that's just not true. You know, they still have to change their diet, even if they have the surgery, or else you go back to square one and you re-stretch your stomach out. So, yeah, well, it's a good point for sure.
What about the habitual eating or the emotional eating or the you're not even hungry, but we're going to go and get something anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Does that dissipate or go away when you really do a raw diet? Do the cravings go away?
I think there are periods of time of cravings going away. You know, it depends on the person and how they're doing it. And I think it also depends on how much drama they have in their life, and it depends on their mental state to begin with. I think if you switch to a raw food diet and you don't change anything else in your life and you are an addictive eater, you're still going to be an addictive raw food eater. Like some people eat a raw chocolate bar every day, which is better than a Hershey's bar every day with all the refined sugars, but it's not optimal for your system to be doing that all day long. Your body would prefer to eat fruit. I know people who eat, you know, raw chips and raw junk food all day long, and that's not optimal for the body. Initially, you lose weight. Initially, you feel like $1,000, but you get to the body stops wanting this, and it does want the healthier options, and so people often do gain back weight on these foods, or they feel bad, or they're still binging. I know for Sarah and I, it's hard for us when we, you know, if we go to Thanksgiving or something and we start eating a little cooked food, we come home craving it all the time because these chemicals get into your brain and they change your chemistry. I mean, you know, cheese and all these things, they're full of opiates and they're full of stuff that says eat, 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 eat all the time and give you these false notions. Mm-hmm. So it is definitely a challenge. I mean, just because we are predominantly raw in our own home doesn't mean that we don't, you know, fight a battle, but we also are constantly researching and reading. We read Constant Craving is a great book by Doreen Virtue, and she has come up with parallels between what people are craving and what they are emotionally going through, down to the finest detail. I mean, to Lucky Charms or, you know, pizza, really? Or all these different things mean different things. And she did this through her research with working with addictive patients because she started out dealing with addiction. But, you know, you can gain some insight by reading that book as to maybe what you can battle or what you are battling emotionally. And then I find for myself, like, I mean, I was just taught to habitually eat all day long. Just my family always had food out and it always tasted good and it was always cooked and delicious and homemade and wonderful. So I have to talk myself out of that. And, you know, when I'm craving the bad stuff, sometimes we just give in, we eat a little, you know, but the strength that I do have now is I know how good I feel on raw food. And I mean, Sarah sitting here too, she knows that too. And we don't ever go back to like a cooked food diet where we don't come home to raw food. You know, we never come to that place where we're just like, oh, screw it, you know, and go hardcore cooked food because we feel so good when we eat raw. So once you get to that place, it'll always bring you back to that place, I think.
Well, I don't think too many people do go into the kitchen to rummage around and think, oh, wow, a green pepper. You know, that excites me, but I'm always trying to choose what is the best thing. We tried to do a raw food switch over last winter, and I thought winter was not a good time to try this because we were cold and the food was...
it's more intense.
Yeah, food was cold. I think we made it through 3 days.
Yeah, you have to do some soups or steamed vegetables or other things like that, but it's not the best time for ice-cold smoothies all day, that's for sure. But people can, you know, you can lightly warm your food, and that's kind of different, but... yeah, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was a great interview, and I really enjoyed talking with you, too. And I look forward to talking with you again.
All right, thanks.
Thank you.
We appreciate it. Yeah, anytime you want to do a show, we're happy to help you out or whatever.
Well, that'll be good because, you know, everybody doesn't hear every show, and they move on down the row and from time to time, and that would be good. In fact, probably I'd like to do a teleseminar too, where, and it can be half an hour or something, you know, it'll be a little tighter maybe, but it'll be the same type of information. And then you'll still have another opportunity to share your book. Is it an ebook or is it a physical book? Oh, it's a
both.
Physical book.
It's either way people prefer it. Yeah, it came out initially as a physical one, and then we just turned it into an ebook, you know, just for planetary reasons and for sake of ease for people.
Oh, it is a big stake of ease, and it keeps your expenses down, too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Doc. Well, I thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, Catherine.
Talk with you again.
Okay.
Bye. Bye-bye.